gonna go ahead and start. This is our first episode of Sankofa Dialogues series, an oral history podcast with the Southwest Mississippi Multiplex for Early Innovative Intervention Studies. We are very honored for our inaugural episode to have Ms. Brenda Travis. We're going to jump right into our interview. But before I do, Ms. Brenda Travis recently authored a book, Mississippi's Exiled Daughter, How My Civil Rights Baptism Under Fire Shaped My Life. It inspired a lot of a lot of this conversation is inspired by the content in Ms. Travis's book. Thank you so much for agreeing to do this, Ms. Travis. Just to get us started, I was wanting to know how you would define progressiveness as it relates to the Black community. And you can, that can be sort of a national thought, or it can be specific to Southwest Mississippi. Mm-hmm. But how would you define progressiveness?
Well, I would define progressiveness as, and most of the time I refer to things as tools, mm-hmm. because to me that's what we are. We're tools in the flesh. And in order to be progressive, we have to advocate. We advocate for our children in school. We advocate for change in our communities and in our lives to make it different and to make it better. So progressiveness to me is a tool of advocacy.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. In your book, Mississippi's Exiled Daughter, you speak passionately about the murder of Emmett Till and how that sparked something in you at the age of 10. Do you think our Black 10-year-old boys and girls still need to see those Emmett Till images, and what impact do you think it would have if we showed those images in classrooms and homes today?
I spoke of advocacy. We have not done that with the youth. We have not taught or trained them. You ask a young person today, you know, what's going on in your life? How do you feel about what's happening in your surroundings, in your schools, right, in your neighborhoods? And they're oblivious. Mm-hmm. They haven't a clue. So I don't think it would be effective. As a matter of fact, I was with a group of young youth, and I was showing them clips from the protests in Alabama. But it wasn't just in Alabama, it was throughout the South, but more so in Alabama, where Bull Connor, who was a chief then, were putting dogs on protesters, or taking the fire hydrant and spraying protesters down the street. And it was the pressure of the water hose was just so powerful, until bodies were being washed down the street as though it was a piece of paper. These young people saw humor in that. They laughed. Yes, ma'am. They laughed. They didn't know any better. I couldn't get upset with them because they had not been taught. We have lost generations out here that we need to work on to recapture and recover, and let them know that it is a dangerous world in which you're living in today. They're not paying any attention to some young man getting shot down on the street just because he's black or just because he's walking and smoking a cigarette. And it's like they stop the lynchings and they start shooting our black men and boys down like they're animals, using choke holds and smothering them out. I can't breathe. I can't breathe. It meant absolutely nothing. This is emotional for me.
Yes, ma'am.
This is very emotional for me. But we have a lot of work to do.
Yes.
We have to begin to make our youth aware of their surroundings, aware of what's going on in this world. Instead of standing on the street corners or walking up and down the streets, bring them in and say, this is you, this is your life, this is what's happening with you, this is what's happening in your community. Now that you're aware, what can, not you, don't ask them about what they can do. What can we do? How are we going to remedy this? So, the youth, and I'm so sorry, Mississippi is one of the few states in the union who mandated that they teach civil rights in the schools. We had a group that got a huge grant from Kellogg, came into the Macomb School District, taught for a while something about local cultures or something like that, and as the money began to dwindle, they left. They left. So I think about 5 or 6 years ago, that was the last time that they had local cultures classes. Now, I've tried to obtain the information that, you know, Vicki Malone.
Yes.
I've tried to obtain the information and the documentaries and things that she had in that class. Mm-hmm. I've requested that they be gifted, donated to the Brenda Travis, and this is a historical education foundation. We're changing the name to foundation because they understand that foundation denotes that you have money. We don't have money, but we do have information and education to share if any man has an ear.
Thank you.
I didn't mean to go off on a tangent.
This is a conversation. It goes where it needs to go.
Okay.
And you're okay to continue?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, ma'am. Okay. I'm gonna jump to this because you kind of touched on it a little bit. I couldn't help but think about Sandra Bland when you talked about your first time being arrested. And that chapter really resonated with me because of the current trends in U.S. corrections with racial profiling and police brutality. So when you sort of described, you know, being in that cell with your cellmate, that story was also very interesting too about your cellmate. But you used the expression that you were at peace in that jail cell, knowing that your reason for being there would make the world a better place.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a two-part question. Were you at all afraid? And do you think the world is a better place?
If the world is better, but I know it's different.
Mm-hmm.
It's different in that what we did then exposed Mississippi and the South, not just Mississippi, but Alabama and Georgia and Mississippi to the world. Mm-hmm. So it's then that people began to come from different countries and different states and things to look at Mississippi. Better? Maybe for a moment. Maybe for a moment. But that moment didn't last because we didn't keep it going. And that's why I'm here today, trying to pick up the pieces of our shattered lives and still make a difference. This lady, I always called her Ma Baker, but she became one of my guardians for, you know, momentarily, and she made sure I went to a private school in North Carolina, Palmer Memorial Institute. Palmer is no longer in existence, but that's a historical site. But in 1963, she was a woman even then before her time, because she was a co-founder of, one of the co-founders of SNCC, which is the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. But in 1963, and I wish that you would listen to her speech, because Honey on the Rocks made a song from her speech. Until the killing of black men, black mothers' sons, as important as the killing of white men, white mothers' sons, we who believe in freedom cannot rest. So it was from there, you know, songs like that. There are plenty of songs of the movement, and yeah. I have chill bumps on me now. We who believe in freedom cannot rest. And for those of us who are in our advanced years, who are still going out there, having a voice, and trying to instill in these young people and encourage them to stand up. Don't go out of your element. Stop going and getting all this false hair and stuff on your head, young girl, and be as pretty as you are. You don't need that to be beautiful. You're trying to be somebody else. When you look at the mirror, look at you. Don't look at somebody else. We who believe in freedom cannot rest. We who believe in freedom cannot rest until it comes.
That's beautiful. Wow. Were you afraid in that jail cell?
You know, to say that I wasn't afraid would be an untruth. Mm-hmm. Of course. Mm-hmm. For me not to have been afraid would mean there's something wrong with me. There is something wrong with me now. Mm-hmm. But to say, it reminds me of another song where it talked about whispering a happy tune so no one will suspect. The happiness in the tune convinces me that I'm not afraid. And so we had many freedom songs that kept us uplifted and motivated and helped us to lose the fear. Ain't I scared of your jail, cause I want my freedom. I want my freedom. I want my freedom. Ain't I scared of your jail, cause I want my freedom. I want my freedom now. Losing the fear.
Yes. Wow, the power of music.
Yes.
Yes, it's amazing.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
it's only one more question, and then anything else you'd like to share. But you mentioned in your book that back in the day, most Black folks were dependent on white people for their livelihood. Absolutely. Do you believe that has changed today in Macomb or in the South in general?
I pondered this question. Mm-hmm. And I pondered this question because even after returning to Mississippi, I feel, I see that there's still a lot of fear.
Right.
There's still a lot of fear. Mm-hmm. And once you eliminate that fear, then you have a powerhouse. But still, people are ruled by fear and intimidation still. I don't understand it. Where you allow fear to hold you back. That was part of the previous question before about being afraid to be in the jail. It goes back to the Willie Lynch mentality, where you're keeping that man suppressed and oppressed, and you're going to keep him down. There are a lot of Black people who have their business, who have businesses that they didn't have before. They weren't allowed to have them before. But even then, even now, the white man is still in control, because you have to go before him in order to get licensed to be able to operate. So yes, they're still ruling by fear and intimidation. I got to do what old Mr. Charlie said to. Mm-hmm. I had to tell a lady just on Monday, well, a woman, just on Monday, no white woman. She said, okay, girl, thank you. I looked back at her. I said, well, you know what? I'm 74 years young, and when I stop being a girl, let me know, please. Let me know. Don't graduate from girl to ain't. Let me know when I, I didn't mean it. I didn't mean it like I said it. Well, how did you mean it? How many times, what's the definition of girl? Huh? What's the definition of girl? Oh, I am so sorry. Can you please forgive me? I said, you know what, I forgave you a long time ago, but I can't ignore you.
Right.
I forgave you, but right. I cannot ignore you.
Right.
So we as Black people have to, you know, we forgive, but we can't ignore. It's just like our illustrious president said, President Barack Obama. He said, wait a minute, what is it about something but verify? Oh, I lost the quote, but I know it.
But he is our forever illustrious president.
Oh my goodness, as well as I know it. Well, you see, that shows that advancement in age.
I'm gonna find it for you. Okay. I know that we've gone to places with this conversation, deep places, and let me tell you, I have had chills as well, and trying to hold back tears, just listening to you go to these places, and everything is just so vivid in my mind. It really did something to me as an educator, knowing that children are, you know, seeing, you know, historic images and footage of our civil rights history and not knowing how to properly respond to that. You know what I mean? This has been, as an educator, as an artist and a performing artist and someone who knows the power of music and how arts can preserve this history, I appreciate you for taking us on this journey. It really felt like we were on a journey in conversation with each other. Is there anything else before we close out? Is there anything you would like to say to our community, today's community right here in Southwest Mississippi? Is there anything you want to leave us with?
There's so much that I want to leave this community with. The most powerful one being the gift of love. We have to learn how to love ourselves. And we have to learn how to want better than what we have. We have to learn how to throw complacency in the box and burn it. Mm-hmm. We can't just accept things, or we shouldn't, because we do accept things at all. Well, there's nothing I can do about it. I don't know anything in this world that I can't do something about.
Right.
Even if it means going on my knees and the first thing I do is pray about it. So what I say to the community is that we can become that powerhouse. We can become that light on the hill that beams forever into the hearts and into the minds of our children. We've got to do it. We cannot leave it up to anyone else to do it. Mm-hmm. We must be the one to go forth. Oh, freedom.
Where would you like people to go to buy your book? Where can we get your book? Amazon?
You can get it from Amazon.
Okay.
And I would appreciate it if after reading the book, like for instance, mm-hmm. go through Amazon and then you can call in and mm-hmm. read the book.
Mm-hmm.
You can send comments about the book.
Okay.
Right now, I went into Amazon the other day and I had a 5-star rating.
Awesome. Yes. That's amazing.
Yes. I would prefer that they go to Amazon.
Okay.
When I come back, I'll have some books, you know, where they can come. And then, as a matter of fact, maybe what I should do, I had a book signing here in Macomb before
mm-hmm.
at the library.
Mm-hmm.
And I need to come into the community.
Okay.
So when I come back, which is going to be in about another 3 months,
mm-hmm.
I'll bring books and have a book signing where local people who may not have transportation or whatever, they can come into the foundation.
Wonderful.
And I will sign their book.
Well, let us know when you would like, when that's going to be, and we'll make sure that we publicize that and help get the word out.
Okay.
And make sure that we get people there. And if you, if you want it on site, we'll follow our website and social media, and we'll make sure that you know how you can get it directly from Ms. Brenda Travis. If you're a virtual person, you can go to Amazon and search Mississippi's Exiled Daughter, How My Civil Rights Baptism Under Fire Shaped My Life by Ms. Brenda Travis. Thank you so much for your time. And we will see you on our next episode. Blessings.